And go. Hello and a very warm welcome to Couch Experts cricket podcast show Silly Point. I'm Gautam and on today's show we discuss the spirit of cricket, India's injury woes mount for as Zahir Khan is ruled out of the series in preparation for the third test at Edgbaston, Rahul Dravid's surprise ODI call up, Australia's tour of Sri Lanka and the test match return of Zimbabwe. Joining me on today's cricket show are Achandra Jayaramakrishnan, who is the head of cricket at the Couch Expert and a popular cricket blogger. Chandra joins us from Chennai. Chandra, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Gautam. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks a lot, Chandra. Also joining us all the way from Mountain View, California is Rajat Jain, who is a hugely popular cricket writer and a tennis writer at Bleacher Report and is also the head of tennis here at the Couch Expert. Rajat, thanks a lot for joining us.
And my pleasure. And hello to all our viewers.
Thanks a lot, Rajat. Let's get the show going then, and we'd like to start off with an incident that is a week old now, but still gaining a lot of media space. That's got to do with Ian Bell's run out, and then India's decision to reinstate him, and you know, in the name of the spirit of the game. Let's get started with you, Chandra. I mean, what did you make of Ian Bell's decision and also India's decision to reinstate him after the mega saga at the stroke of tea?
I guess I'll side with Dhoni with respect to this incident because spirit of cricket. Well, you know, I for one believe that the word's been abused and to an extent where the original meaning has been lost in a fog of, you know, too much respect, mystery, and controversy. And we've seen or heard about a lot of similar incidents in the past, haven't we? Let me give you a very simple example in a very simple case of a batsman, say, getting out to a no ball. He doesn't hear the call from the umpire and he starts his walk back to the pavilion. So he's not in his crease, he's not attempting a run, but there's always going to be a shy at the sums. And if the furniture is damaged, under the law, he's found to be out. And I think this happened to Dean Jones once against the West Indies. I don't recollect the year. And I think Viv Richards was the captain back then. And I don't recall him withdrawing the appeal at that point of time. Additionally, I'll also refer to the article that you had written, Gautam, where you refer to a few incidents, namely the Sangakkara Muralidharan incidents against New Zealand. I think Murli was off to congratulate Kumar Sangakkara, and he was definitely not attempting a run at that point of time, and he was declared run out, much to Sangakkara's annoyance, I presume. And I think New Zealand ended up winning the Spirit of Cricket Award that year as well, so it's pretty ironic when you look at it that way. But another perspective, just to put this, you know, quite clear, is how many other captains in today's era would have done what Dhoni did? You know, this is always going to be a tough question. And what I believe is easier to contemplate is how many will start following Dhoni's lead. Because I believe such decisions are very personal by nature. And it need not reflect the characteristic of the person involved. Because in most cases, they just end up reacting to the situation more than anything else, like Dhoni did out there in the middle. Because when the appeal was made and I think Marais Erasmus had gone up to him and asked, do you want to withdraw this appeal? Dhoni at that point of time out in the middle said, no, I'm going to, you know, hold on to the appeal. But, you know, we had a tea break, fortunately, after that. And of course, the team didn't feel right about it. But to have the opposing captain and coach head to the Indian dressing room and request for the appeal to be withdrawn, I think the English team went a bit too far with it. And what's your view on this?
I did write on my article on the Couch Expert that, you know, I did refer to a few of the incidents that you had mentioned as well. I don't think I referred to the Dean Jones incident, but I think that was slightly different because, you know, once it is a no ball and once the batsman thinks he's out, the ball is as per the laws of the game, I think it is. The ball is construed to be dead. I think we had a similar incident in the 92 World Cup final when Ramiz Raja, I think, trotted out of the crease and then, you know, for a no ball. And if I'm not wrong, Steve Buckner was a square leg umpire and he did mention a no ball when the English tried to run him out. So personally, I mean, I wouldn't really have had a problem if Dhoni had, you know, gone ahead and stuck to his initial decision of having to uphold his team's appeal against Ian Bell. I mean, Ian Bell was clearly dozing off. I mean, you could really see in the in the replay that, you know, maybe he was trying to run to him, to the partner, to congratulate on a really good session for England. But you could also see that, Owen Morgan, I think, was at the other end, who was waving to him, suggesting, say, you go back. But I think at some point, Bell didn't know what to do, but he just thought he would keep his pretend of going to congratulate his mate at the other end, and he kept walking. And, he did also agree in the post-match, or at the end of the day's play, that he was being slightly stupid on his part. And that kind of a thing. And I mean, it's I slightly agree also from your standpoint in terms of it being an individual decision or a captain's decision. There's been quite a lot, but quite a lot that's been said about it. Rajat, I'll come to you straight in a minute. I'll just try to bring in some other perspective. See, we had this incident, and no matter what, Chandra would think, saying that it's a very individual opinion. And if I were to be Mahendra Singh Dhoni, I don't think I would have called Ian Bell back. But we had, really strange reactions from the English media, wherein former captains like Nasser Hussain, he said that he wouldn't have called Ian Bell back. But he did say that if somebody like a Duncan Fletcher had sat him down, at the tea break, and said that, no, you're doing something for in the larger interest of the game, then he said he might have given in to that. And interestingly, Michael Atherton, he questioned the spirit of game in a slightly different way. He said that, it's one thing that you call a person back by saying that you might not have been right in the first place to appeal for that. Having appealed and having having the decision being made by the umpire, how is it in the spirit of the game that you again go back on the decision of the umpire? I mean, how is that in the spirit of the game? I mean, that's also a very interesting point that Atherton brought in. I mean, we had people like Saurav Ganguly, Sunil Gavaskar, who were totally with Mahendra Singh Dhoni and the team. In terms of making the right decision, but we also had people on the other side of the fence. Rajat, I mean, cricket has this, nasty habit of, this moral of the game kind of a thing, where cricket is supposed to have it better than other sport. I mean, you cover a lot of tennis as well. I mean, how do you see this incident?
Well, so this is a little, this is a new incident for me. Like in tennis these days, actually, there is a lot of spirit in the game. You know, with Federer, Nadal and Djokovic on top, all of them are very good sportsmen. And you can see even when Djokovic is winning the match or losing the match, he'll always applaud his opponent's good shots, which was almost unheard in the times of Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe, and even during Sampras's era. But interesting that you mentioned Michael Atherton's view here, because that was my exact view when Ian Bell came out. I mean, I was totally fine with Dhoni's decision wherever he went, either not recalling back or recalling Bell back. But I was appalled as to how Ian Bell had the guts, or let's say balls, to come back on the pitch when he was ruled out. I mean, I'm surprised that that issue is not talked by the media a lot. And it was really unfortunate that even, let's even say that Strauss and Flowers' decision to come back to come to the Indian dressing room and ask for a recall was acceptable. But it was totally unacceptable on my part when Bell strode out to the crease again and later kept on saying that he was stupid. I mean, you got to face your errors in judgment and just accept it.
Rajat, are you saying that I mean, I know that it was mentioned by a few people, wherein once a step was taken by Andy Flower and Andrew Stowes to walk into the Indian dressing room and ask for the Indians to withdraw the appeal, and having withdrawn the appeal, are you saying Ian Bell should have let his conscience do the ruling and then say, no, I know I did a mistake and I shouldn't have walked out to the middle?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, that's my whole point. That Dhoni's example, okay. Again, I feel that it is the Indian nature. That India is part of this thing, so it has gained huge media traction. When you have posted a lot of examples of things where things had happened before too. So that's why, again, I thought Bell's decision was strange. So it's one thing when you are just going back to pavilion and the fielding side withdraws the appeal and you come back to the pitch, that's still okay. Or if, say, you are taking a run and suddenly the bowler runs into you and you fell down, that's totally different thing. That's not your error in judgment. But this time it was totally Bell's fault. I mean, how is it different from, okay, you wanted to leave the ball, but you just had a poke with it and it went to the slip. How is it different from it? They are both errors in judgment, albeit on different levels. So
I agree with what Rajat says. Sorry, Gautam. I just wanted to add something to what
I was
Rajat
just
said.
coming to you. I was just coming to you. I mean, Rajat did mention that, you can. I was just trying to say here, we have this weird incidents with cricket wherein, you really look at something like a run out, or we did have a couple of incidents with Inzamam Ulhaq wherein he was just trying to protect the stumps when people started throwing at the stumps and he was given out obstructing the field. I mean, where does it all
And we have
end?
the same Sachin Tendulkar incident too during 99. So
I totally agree. Chandra, your take, I mean, you did wanted to add a few things on this, and also from a moral standpoint, how was this alone different from any of the other things that we discussed?
what I wanted to add was probably the only aspect that was most disturbing about this entire incident as such was for Flower to come out and say that had this happened in India to Indian, say, a batsman like Sachin Tendulkar, this would have been an incident of international furor. I think that was totally needless to say. And what I'm going to do right now is, again, I'm going to turn around the
And
tables and I'm going to say
to add to it
had
was
this.
not. I mean, Tendulkar was run out during 99 against Pakistan when the rivalry was red hot, and the crowd got mad, but Tendulkar came out and they went silent. So it did
Yeah,
not
I guess
happen.
that's.
Just to add.
Yes, but what Flower was saying was, I mean, let me just add to what Flower was saying. I'm going to put the table down. I'm going to say, had this been the other way around, say, had Dhoni and Fletcher walked into the English dressing room and requested for an appeal against an Indian batsman to be withdrawn, I'm sure you're going to hear plenty of voices that come out and say that they have to succumb to the demands of the most powerful cricketing body in the world. I mean, how frequently have we seen this with the English media? And that is one aspect that has really disturbed me more than anything else about this incident, because debates are going to be endless. But in hindsight, I thought Dhoni made the right call in the end. Whether other captains will follow it, I'm not too sure. But it's always nice for a cricket fan to see a bit of sportsmanship on the field these days, which is something quite rare. But as Rajat, as you rightly said, from Bell's perspective, it was very naive indeed. It's a batsman's game these days, and we all know it. And it is a batsman's responsibility to ensure that he's safe out there in the middle, avoid silly errors like these especially. And that really is the message that needs to get across to batsmen these days after this incident.
Yeah, definitely.
No, guys, I'll just come back to both of you individually to look at this entire incident. I know that we've debated it at length, but at the end of the game, Strauss did mention that, given that, I mean, had he been in a similar situation, he thought he would have, he said that he would have liked to believe that he would have done a similar thing. But does it mean that, after this incident, that we've actually set a precedent for future captains to, probably act in a better sense or probably be more honest going forward? Do you really think that is going to happen? Rajat, you want to go first?
It's subjective. I mean, it happens for some people, it doesn't happen for a lot of people. But one good thing that I liked was this gained a lot of media traction. Incidents in past haven't had such reach in the media, and if that helps, then I'm fine with it. And it'll be good to see. But I don't want to see cases where people become too sportsmanship, and let's say if a person is suffering from cramps, then they allow him a runner, which was not what Strauss did against Graham Smith. So it should be done in the right thing, but not for all cases.
Chandra, your take?
Chandra.
If you're going to ask me if future captains are going to use this as an example and follow it, my answer is going to be no. Because how many of us remember the Gundappa Vishwanath incident from the 70s? I'm not able to recollect the year. I'm not able to recollect the name of the batsman as well. But I did read a news article where Gundappa Vishwanath came out and said that it was a real shame that people didn't remember the gesture that he had made to that batsman back in the 70s. So if that's the sort of respect that sportsmanship is going to get these days, and cricket becoming a more selfish game with people's pride and reputation at stake, because the minute they don't want to stay there for a very long time, because once they're dropped, to get back into the team is going to be very difficult, like what Ravi Bopara is facing right now. He's just made it to the team after a very bad 2009 Ashes. Now, not to get into that perspective, what I'm trying to say is the attitude of any individual playing sport at the highest level would be to protect his own interests. And with respect to that, if you ask me if future captains are going to follow this as an example, I'm afraid the answer is no.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, we've debated at this le at length, and I understand. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, if should a similar incident happen straightforward and say in the third test or in the fourth test, we would really like to know how it's going to impact, and probably whoever is the captain that is having to make that decision, we would probably come to know, or we'll anyways come to know, I think, when the next incident happens. Now let's move on to our next discussion here. It's got to do with India's preparation for the third test, and injuries have played, you know, a big part in India not having done well, or so claim a lot of people. And as recent as yesterday, you know, we got to see Zahir Khan just bowl 3 overs and then limp out of the game. And now, as per the latest returns, as per the latest reports, we get to hear that he's out for 14 to 16 weeks. So, Rajat, I'll come to you first. Zahir Khan, you know, I mean, just to go back, you know, slightly 2 months, 2 months back, you know, before the West Indies series, we didn't have a situation wherein, you know, he pulled out with a an ankle injury, and now he did pull out with a hamstring injury shortly. It's just a recurrence of the same injuries again. What's your take on Zahir Khan and his fitness and India's injury woes as a whole?
So I'll just talk about Zahir first. So I would say that it would be another way of looking at it from the third test would be, at least it's a blessing in disguise for India that, okay, now our bowlers know that, okay, in England we have to be by ourselves. We don't have a leader. We have to take the responsibility. And I just hope someone like, say, Srishant or Ishan Sharma, let's start thinking that, okay, this is the time for me to take responsibility and become the leader of the pack and suddenly start performing. If that happens, then this will be a blessing in disguise for India. And also that we'll now go with a clear mind, even though it'll be negative, but it will not be hanging in balance. Say, will Zahir play in the next test? Will he not play? Even if he plays, will he survive 2 innings? So, okay, all those doubts are cleared. We are on our own now. Secondly, injuries are unfortunate, and Zahir has struggled with injuries throughout his career. I know numerous cases where he has not completed the whole test series. He had to pull out of 1 or 2 tests of a long series. So it's not a new thing for him, but in that case, I certainly believe it is more unfortunate than something to rove about. So.
Interesting that, you know, you do say that, but, you know, one way to look at Zahir's injury in particular, from, say, my personal viewpoint, or from most people's viewpoint, would be, you know, like Zahir has been crucial for India's ascent to the top at the test level, at the one day level, and he's been seen as the one most important reason as to why we've even been there at the top for a year now. So from that standpoint, and also having seen how tough it has been for India, you know, without Zahir in the two tests, I mean, albeit that he played at the Lord's test, he just lasted about 7 or 14 overs. That's about it. But would you say from that angle, do you really think it is a big blow to India's chances of coming back into this test series? How do you see that? Rather,
I
yeah.
certainly think India has a chance to get
Gautam,
back.
was that for
I
me?
mean, if you just need to look at the first innings, pardon me?
Rajat, go ahead.
Yeah. So you just need to look at the first test when India had England in shambles. And they had just a lap of con last lapse of concentration, or God knows what happened after 120 for eight. The match just slipped away. But in English pitches, Indian fast bowlers have a chance. Ishant bowled wonderfully that day. Praveen Kumar has shown a lot of promise. Praveen Kumar is not someone I would say can become a leader of the pack. Ishant Sharma definitely has the potential for it. So I'd be more looking. And if you think Zaheer is not the battle for Zaheer is uphill from now on. He's almost entering mid 30s now. So it's not that we'll have 10 years of Zaheer Khan with us. So I would say it's a blessing in disguise. It'll be difficult to come back into the series, but if the first innings is any indication, if we go with some positive mindset, our bowlers have the capability.
Wonderful. Chandra, Rajat says that Zahir's absence might actually be a blessing in disguise for this bowling attack. Now that they're really certain that Zahir is not going to be around, and whatever that has to be done, if at all India has to make a huge turnaround in this series and come make a miraculous comeback of sorts, it's now with these young boys that are there, and it's a chance for people like Ishan, to be the leader of the pack and then deliver the goods. And how do you see it from your perspective? Chandra?
I kind of agree with Rajat here, because when you look at the course of events of the first two tests, it's hard to argue with Dhoni's reasons, isn't it? It's hard to argue with Dhoni's reasons, is it, when you look at the course of events that's taken place of the first two tests, because there are no questions over the fact that the Indian bowlers have been overworked of late, and packed calendars are not helping either. And a lot of the other teams, including Australia, have also complained over this. But we've had to play two tests without four fully fit bowlers. It's an excuse which is reasonable enough. But I always thought that the intent of the public in questioning the performance of the world's number one team, even otherwise, had a bit of suspect to it. And this is where Rajat's perspective comes into the picture. Because without Zaheer Khan, we're going to have a pretty tough time in trying to claim that we're a great side. Because it's often been said that great sides have had great bowling, great bowling units that have fetched 20 wickets more often than not. And that really did not seem a characteristic one could associate with the Indian team. Because there was a bit of suspect with the authority with which India climbed to the top of the ICC rankings, considering the fact that we did not have the best bowling attack in the world. And when you consider the opinions of the best experts in the world, Zaheer was probably among the only bowlers who was truly world-class. So I believe that every top team will face challenges at some point of time when they're at their best. The Aussies and the War had to lose a series. In India, they lost a series in Sri Lanka as well, I think. But that doesn't mean that they were written off, were they? So if this series is going to help India bounce back with a hang, it's especially if people have to sit down, head back to the drawing board and evaluate their strengths and weaknesses, especially without Zaheer Khan, I think this is where Fletcher's role is going to be very important. Remember when he took over as the coach of the Indian team, there were a lot of talks of things coming in a shiny silver platter for him. And it's great in one perspective to see Fletcher being handed a serious challenge right now. And without Zaheer, there's going to be an ample opportunity for other bowlers to come and stamp their authority. I agree with Rajat on that.
Wonderful. Now that we've discussed the opportunities that these injuries pose, I mean, how about these injuries by themselves? I mean, we've had people talk about injuries and injuries not being managed properly. We had Nasser Hussain mentioning saying that the injuries are sickly, followed upon by the English board. You have people. There is a recouping plan that is there, and each day your performance is being monitored or it is being documented, and that kind of a thing. It doesn't seem to be the case with the Indians. We work a lot with people empowerment, and that's something that we had a lot of these people mention about Gary Kirsten, you know, having given them the freedom to look after themselves, and then you went by their word. If somebody came and told you that, you know, say Zahir Khan came and told you that he was fit enough for the game, you just went by his word, and that kind of a thing. Rajat, from your viewpoint, I mean, how much of this would you really consider it to be legitimate? I know that these people are saying that they've been playing non-stop cricket. It's the same with, you know, say tennis players, right? They play around 40 weeks of the year, or you have these football players that play around the year. What's your take on, you know, there being too much of cricket, and how do you see that people look after themselves?
Well, first thing, not sure if you had read an article or not, but there was an article comparing the workload of the yearly work average workload of Zaheer Khan and Kapil Dev. And it was, I don't remember the exact statistics, but it was something like Zaheer Khan had bowled just 100 balls over a year more than Kapil Dev used to do in his time. So, and we also need to make sure that even though today we are playing a lot of cricket, there was a lot of test cricket that was played back then. And test cricket requires a lot more stamina and better fitness. So, I for one don't agree that lot of cricket is a problem. I do agree that the scheduling is a problem. I mean, you don't play Indian Premier League 1 week after a mentally exhausting World Cup victory. Having said that, just see tennis. You have Wimbledon just 2 weeks after the French Open. I mean, these two are the probably the biggest tournaments of the tennis fraternity, and players do cope up with it. So there are injury problems in tennis too, but the problem that I see with the Indian cricket team is that of fitness. So let's say for Rafael Nadal, Nadal's injury problems are not due to his fitness. It is due to his internal body structure. But for most of the Indian problems, the injuries are due to fitness. Just look at Yuvraj Singh. I mean, he is not fit to be an athlete, let alone be an international athlete. So such is the fitness woes in India. And I think that if India work towards their fitness, the injury woes will automatically go away. So.
It's interesting that you put it that way. You know, you did compare somebody like Rafael Nadal, who will probably go down as among the greatest athletes, you know, across all sport, and then probably Yuvraj Singh, who's probably at this point in his career not probably among the best even in India. Coming back to you, Chandra, Raja did touch upon you know, the need for schedule being slightly better, and also for the fitness of people being slightly better. I mean, how do you side on this issue? Is it a scheduling issue? Is it a preparation issue? Like I thought it was when I did put up a post on Couch Expert. I did mention that it was probably got a lot to do with how individuals prepare and teams prepare themselves. So you know that, you know, like how he mentioned that, you know that there's a French Open in place, you know that there is a Wimbledon in place, you prepare. You know that those tournaments are there. It's not that you don't know, and you probably prioritize yourself based on that. Chandra, your take. I mean, it'll be interesting to know how you see this.
I cannot side with either side. I do not want to completely say it's because of packed schedules. At the same time, I do not want to blame it on the performance, because as you rightly said earlier, when any injured player is being monitored, when his progress is being monitored, and at the very highest level, you're going to have performance metrics taken from the best experts who track the progress of a player every day. And that will lead us to the question asking, why did Zaheer Khan play in Northampton, right? It could be a case of Zaheer himself volunteering and saying that, listen, I feel fit. I think I'm going to play well in this game. I think, you know, I feel good enough and I feel confident enough that I can pull through this game. And was it a case of, say, you're definitely bound to have performance, and was it a case of both of them matching? So did the Indian team physio have records that said, okay, you know, the records, medical records say that Zaheer is fit, I've monitored his performance. And on top of that, I'm going to take his opinion and I'm going to decide if he's going to go ahead with this game. So it was a joint decision. I'm pretty sure that he would not have gone and forced the, you know, management into picking him into this 11, because he would have been very wary of the consequences as well. So that puts the very system of the way you monitor such progress into question. At the same time, yes, every cricketer is aware of the fact that you have very tightly packed calendars as a part of your ICC future to your program. So that gives us a question of, do we not have a bigger pool of players to choose from? Is it essential that we need to see the same 11 or the best 11 playing in every series, and people taking a toll? I mean, cricket taking a toll on their body, because when you look at the players' ages, I mean, the minute you cross 30, the way your body is going to behave is going to considerably change. And I guess Rajat would do more justice in adding claims to that. But I think at that level, when the entire team is monitoring the performance of every individual, they're going to have to know the sort of workload that he can bear, and the sort of games that he's definitely going to have to play, or the games in which you can, choose from a larger pool of players and put it inside. So it's going to be hard to pinpoint at a particular factor, Gautam. I think it's a combination of tight schedules and fitnesses, but fitness is something that is within the player and the management's hand, whereas the schedule is something that the ICC decides. So if it's a question of A plus B equals C, if you cannot control B and you can control A, you're going to have to ensure that whatever you do to A is done to the maximum extent possible. So that's really my take on this.
Okay. I mean, given all the issues that are there, I mean, I do agree to a certain extent in terms of some of the bigger issues being there, but not all series are, scheduled by the ICC. The bilateral series, which constitute the biggest pie of international cricket, I think they are decided by the home boards. So it's interesting. I think we can probably discuss a lot further on this probably in one of our forthcoming shows. Just to go back to this third test, I know that it's been a really difficult last week for India with losing Zahir Khan and before him Yuvraj Singh and then Harbhajan Singh with injuries. Not that they were in real great form in any case, but then having now really having an issue of putting 11 fit men on the park. Now with hopefully Virendra Sehwag coming back, there does seem to be some sort of hope with the Indian fans. I mean, what's your take? I mean, if I can start with Rajat again, I mean, it's probably something that Indian fans would want to look forward to, wouldn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, as hard as we'll feel after not seeing Zahir in the last two tests, we need that sort of encouragement to have Sehwag back in the side. And Sehwag is somebody who can just turn the game in an hour. And as we discussed before, and I think I wrote one of the comments on your blog, that it's what I like about Sehwag is not only that he scores runs. What I like about him is he just upsets the rhythm of the bowlers. I mean, if Stuart Broad was bowling to say Gambhir and Abhinav Mukund, he'll be in rhythm all the time, whether Gambhir and Mukund score at 3 and over or 4 and over. But if they find Sehwag batting at the other end, and even if Sehwag is bowling at 2.5, is batting at 2.5 runs and over, you'll not see Broad bowl with the same rhythm and same confidence as he would bowl to Gambhir and Mukund, or even for that matter Dravid and Lakshman, because Dravid and Lakshman, while great players in their own right, cannot impose their will on the opposition. They can wear them down by patience, and I'm not saying that that is bad. In fact, I'm one of the biggest fans of Dravid and Lakshman. What I'm saying is that we need a Sehwag in the side who can just upset everything. And if you want to say he's like a joker to the batman, if the bowling team is Batman, then Sehwag is a joker who can just upset everything. He can just introduce anarchy in the fielding side, and that's what I really love about Sehwag. So definitely a good positive point to have him back, and I just need to hope that he'll perform again.
I mean, it's actually really cheerful, for a lot of us Sehwag fans that he's actually back, and if not anything else, at least the joy of his batting will probably put a lot of a lot of smiles on many of our faces. Chandra, coming back to you, I mean, Rajat did put it quite beautifully when he said that, he's the joker to the batsman, and he upsets the rhythm of bowlers. I mean, it's true, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the way Sehwag has played over the years, I mean, he scored his first century as an opener in England, I think back in Nottingham during the 2002 series. So he's going to have a lot of good memories with respect to that. And for a champion batsman like him coming into the series, 2-0 down, you're world number one, you have your pride at stake, and you have a lot of injuries. It's going to probably be a case of him shouldering a lot more responsibility to ensure that the new ball is kind of hammered to all corners of the ground. That's what he does best. And people like Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Chris Tamla, they're going to have plenty to worry about because, unlike other batsmen, like Rajat said, Dravid and Lakshman, you know, they're classically great batsmen, you know. They follow the textbook approach of batting. You know, they get their front foot up. They, you know, watch the bowler's ball from hand, and they're going to see how the ball's going to move. And they're going to leave more deliveries than, you know, the ones they're going to play at. Whereas Sehwag, for one, he doesn't have a lot of foot movement. I read that article where you said, I think you beautifully summarized the whole Sehwag incident. He's going to give the English bowlers a lot of headaches. But the fact that they're already 2-0 ahead will kind of ease the pressure in one extent. But then, Sehwag's going to do everything to ensure that the series is going to end up 2-2 and not 2-0 India down. So this is an amazing opportunity for him to come and stamp his authority. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up doing it. But at the same time, we accept Sehwag as a batsman because we know that he could get you 150 from 100 balls, or at the same time he could be dismissed first ball. We love Sehwag, knowing the imperfections that he has. So we're going to be open to both, and it's going to be great. I mean, I'm
Yeah,
really looking forward to the next two tests. But I think
absolutely. I think
what
there's
else?
plenty to look forward to the next two tests. One thing probably that'll worry the Indians would be that you know we didn't get to play a lot of deliveries in the Northampton game, but we'll probably come to know the next 2 days in terms of how fit he's feeling and how fit the rest of them are feeling. So I think yeah, he's definitely a great player in his own right. And okay, coming back to the other big news of Saturday, where India did announce the return of Rahul Dravid for the one-day team. I mean, it's quite surprising that you know a person is actually being pegged when he was not originally there in the one-day side. But we really understand that the decisions could be very different. There are quite a lot that are doing the rounds, but one that is most obvious is that you know we did take that route way back in 2009 when we got bounced out of the World Cup in 2000, the T20 World Cup in England in 2009. West Indies and England bounced us out, and then you know there was a hue and cry all over saying that our young batsman couldn't play you know quick shot bowling, and then we had to go and play a major tournament, the ICC Champions Trophy in South Africa, and then you know we ended up drafting in Dravid for that. It's not that it's not happened before. I know both of you are big Rahul Dravid fans. Rajat, if I can start with you first. I mean, what is it that you see from the selection first, Rahul Dravid being back in the one-day side, and secondly, from a more practical standpoint, what does it mean? What do you make of the decision?
Rahul Dravid's decision can be looked at two ways. The first is that right now we don't have 11 fit members to put in the side, whether it be one days or tests. So, and Dravid, even at this age, is still maybe the 15th or 16th best one day player in the Indian team, and hence he gets the nod. Logic would suggest that it is more of the way India. It is more of due to India's performance in the first two tests that led us to make this decision. Again, I really don't know what is the logic behind putting Rahul Dravid in. Are we just falling back on him as a disaster recovery, like what is happening right now, or are we including him back so that our younger players get more experience? I really don't know, because if it is the latter, then Dravid should at least play in two or three series. But we know from past history that it was not the case. He performed well during the Champions Trophy in 2009, and yet he was not picked when our younger players who do perform well in the subcontinent were chosen ahead of him during a subcontinent series. So we'll have to wait and see how this Dravid selection goes on. As a Dravid fan, it does not excite me these days because he's being treated as a fallback option, but definitely it'll be good to see him in colored suitings.
Rather, just one more quick question before I move over to Chandra. I mean, you did mention that, it's good to see him in colored clothes, but I mean, would you be really hurt if he's not featuring in the 11? I mean, you cannot treat a person of his stature by picking him in the squad and not playing him in the 11, and that might actually happen.
Well, that actually would be ridiculous for me, because you don't perform this way with the senior batsman. I mean, it's okay to not pick him in the one day side, and I'm totally fine with it and I understand the decision. But then if you're not planning to play him in the 11, just don't pick him.
Absolutely, I agree too. I mean, Chandra, just to add on to what Rajat had to say, there's one more, gossipy section of the media that says that, Rahul Dravid has been picked into the one day side so that he can go ahead and actually announce his retirement at the end of it all. Like, it's like Sanath Jayaswi all over again earlier in the English summer. How do you react to that?
I think all that's rubbish. I think Dravid has asked his practice as we were when his name was announced by Srikant and co. And the purpose or the reason behind that still defeats me till date. But I guess, I think Sunil Gavaskar summed it up beautifully. He said that if the ball was going to swing or if it's going to hit to the ribcage, then Indian cricket always falls back on its most loyal servant. But it's a real shame the way they're treating him, isn't it? I mean, Mr. Dibble has become Mr. Dispensable. They're using him as, wicketkeeper. They're asking him to open the innings. They're asking him to come into the one-day side after 23 months of exile. He was treated very badly during the Champions Trophy in South Africa. I don't recall Srikant even telling him a thank you at the end of that. And they've embarked on the same path yet again. And I'm really surprised to look at the way this is happening. But in hindsight, the rest of the world is going to look at this as a backwards step in cricket. I mean, you've won the World Cup without him. You've won it in subcontinent conditions. So people are obviously going to come and say that, listen, outside India, none of these youngsters are going to perform well. And they're going to have to rely on the senior guys who are probably on the wrong side of their 30s right now. But any claims over him being picked into the squad so that he can announce his retirement?
I mean, Chandra, it's one thing to say that, totally agree that it's all rubbish to think that, Rahul Dravid is wanted to be picked for this one-day tournament so that he could announce his retirement. But Rajat, I'll come to you on this one. I mean, there's been a history of the Indian selectors confusing different formats of the game. I mean, you really don't have much of these people having done really badly. I mean, the only person that probably has been having a slightly dodgy form, given the long rope, would be Yusuf Pathan. But outside of him, you have all these people who have done wonderfully well in one-day cricket. Why is it that we've had people, getting drafted into the one-day team based on their IPL performance, some of them being drafted in to the Test match team as the next big thing based on their IPL form. Now here you have a case of these youngsters being found wanting in under really different set of circumstances, the one-day cricket. Now, how would it say feel for somebody like Suresh Raina, who's proved himself to be a wonderful one-day player, if Rahul Dravid makes the team ahead of him?
Just joking. Joking aside, it'll be a dream come true for purists. Like the purists of the game must have been baffled that say IPL performances lead to test match inclusion, but here it's the other way around. Test matches performance are resulting in one-day inclusion.
Absolutely.
Jokes aside, where do you put Rahul Dravid? I mean, that's the big question for me. Will he play at number three, where Sachin, Sehwag and Gambhir have proven themselves in all continents? Or do you play him at number three for solidarity? Or do you play him lower down the order, where historically he has had much better results? So, and again, in the lower order, we have Yuvraj, Raina, who have done pretty well, and I expect them to do well even in English conditions because they come lower down the order and the ball gets rolled. So it'll be interesting to see where Dravid is put up actually. So more than the selection, I'll be more looking forward to it.
I mean, it's interesting that you bring that point up in terms of where he's going to fit in the top order. I mean, obviously, you would think that a fit Sehwag, Tendulkar, and Gambhir would occupy those top three spots. But does it, give room for speculation here that Virender Sehwag might actually not be fit enough? In which case,
Yes.
you will have to find somebody to bat at number three. Would that make sense at all to think that way?
Yeah, I mean, why just take Virender Sehwag? Maybe even Gautam Gambhir might not be totally fit enough. So who knows?
Chandra, your take?
I think the Indian selectors have been really worried about the morale that the team might get into if 50 one-day series doesn't go as well as the, as it probably if it ends up being as how the Test series is styled. In one sense, now when I think about it, yes, they might have played it safe. I mean, Dravid's known the English conditions well. He's played extremely well, and I'm yet to hear the reactions of people like Dhoni or Fletcher, what they discussed during the selection. From what I gather, I guess when his name was mentioned, I thought I heard someone say that Dhoni said okay, and Fletcher said why not. So I'm really not sure what that conveys, but I'm sure that India are really looking to wrap up this one-day series to their favor, to their advantage, because anything and another loss here, you're going to have journalists from all over the world really questioning our ability to stay atop. So there would have been a lot of concern within the selectorial rooms about how we were going to, at least even, how we're going to mitigate the risks of injury that might come up. So it's always safe to have Dravid on the top. But if he doesn't feature in the starting 11, I think it's going to be a real shame. I think he should just probably do what Navjot Singh did back in 1996. He should catch the next flight from Heathrow and head back to India, seriously.
Pretty strong opinions there. I mean, it's interesting that you look at this as probably as a backward step in terms of India falling back upon somebody who's who was a legend of the game. Make no mistake about that in both forms of the game. But going back to somebody who was probably not considered to be good enough for the 2011 World Cup. Now you're going back to him, and you definitely know that he's not going to be around, and it cannot be part of your scheme of things for the 2015 World Cup. Two teams that have moved on from, the 2011 World Cup and have taken a different course of action in terms of team selection and everything else from India would be Australia and Sri Lanka. We'll just briefly discuss this, Australia and Sri Lanka. To start off with, I think it is going to be an important series for both teams. Both teams have moved on, as we said, from the World Cup with a new one-day captain and a new Test captain in the form of Michael Clarke for Australia, and Cameron White taking over as the T20 captain, and Dilshan taking over as the captain for Sri Lanka in all forms of the game. And Australia have made this brave decision to go in with a lot of these youngsters, and there's been a huge ruckus that's been made out with Katic being left out, that kind of a thing. And Sri Lanka have obviously moved on, and we did get to see some exciting talent play in England in the form of Chandimal and then Jeevan Mendes. And even on Saturday's T20 game, we did see a little bit of really skillful bowling from a 29-year-old, not really a young gun, in the Luan Pereira. Just the thoughts from both of you. Let me start off with Chandra. What from your point of view would be the one thing that probably say Sri Lanka would want out of the series or Australia would want out of the series? Because both teams are post Sri Lanka they're post the Muralidharan and Chamindavas has not been around for a while, but definitely post Muralidharan in one-day format. And it's going to be important to see how that goes. I mean, how do you see this, say from Sri Lanka's point of view and also from Australia's point of view?
I think it's going to be similar from both perspectives, because I think both these teams are going through a fairly transitional stage when you look at it. I mean, Kumar Sangakkara, Mahila Jayawardena, Tilakaratne, Dilshan, they've been their key players. And they're probably closer to their mid-30s, and they're not going to be around for too long, at least when you look at 2015 World Cup. But I guess looking at the game yesterday, and what I really concluded was that the biggest influence was, of course, Dilshan with his 100, and even the bowling decisions he made as a captain was actually quite good, trying to break down the Australian batsman, because I didn't expect him to captain so well. Because I'd always looked at Dilshan as an explosive batsman who could come into the top of the order, much like a Virendra Sehwag. But I did have doubts over his cricketing brain, but I thought he did extremely well yesterday. But from a Sri Lankan perspective, the worrying sign is that apart from Dilshan, there weren't too many big contributions. I mean, the bowlers who really tore through the Aussies. I thought they did well, but again, when you move to Cameron White's perspective, they should have played much better than what they did yesterday. And I don't think Cameron White understood the conditions well, because I thought Sri Lanka used it quite well. They used their spinners, like you rightly said. But Cameron White somehow bemusingly focused more on his pace bowlers when he had a lot of spin options available as well. So I think it's looking out of sorts for Australia right now, because Cameron White, he hasn't had a great run into the series, has he? He's their T20 captain, but I'm not sure if he's going to really figure in their ODI and test plans at all, because I thought he had a very average run into this. But whether Australia have slightly adjusted to this and if they can, really turn the series around, I have no idea. But both teams are going to want to win the series equally well, because both of them are going through a fairly transitional stage and really hoping for a very solid future with respect to their team selection.
I mean, we did get to see, typical, Sri Lankan performance yesterday, putting big runs on the board and then using their spinners through the middle overs to choke the opposition. It was very typical of, how Sri Lankans play their one day cricket. Rajat, coming to you, I mean, what is it that you see? I mean, we are seeing flavors of, Greg Chappell using his youth as the future of the vision, and if we really look at expert opinion from around the world, I don't think anybody outside of Peter Roebuck has bought into his decision of, sacking Simon Cattage, for example. So, how do you see this? I mean, as a, how do you see this series from your point of view?
I think Australia is using this series as more as an opportunity with the selections that they have made and with the way they'll be following this series. So, I mean, let's be honest here. A series in Sri Lanka, it's a huge task. Sri Lanka at their home are probably as powerful as India as powerful as India is at their home, and I don't think anybody would expect Australia to really win the series, but they would be, and that includes the Australian board themselves. They'd be looking at how players are able to adapt themselves from Australian conditions to the Sri Lankan, and probably identify the next future stars of their cricket. So they'll be trying hard as always, as the Australians are known for, but at the back of the mind, I don't think they really expect to win. They do expect to see how things look for them in the future and who are the players they should count on.
Yeah, I mean, I would sort of agree with you here in terms of, Sri Lanka being a really difficult task for most teams. I don't think even India has won a test series there since 93. I don't think we've actually done well post 2000. We had, we had a couple of series during the late 90s where it was very difficult to get either of the batting sides out. Now I think it's totally different, and I agree with you here, with it being difficult for Australia. I would think that Australia would do well if they are able to win one of the three series. I don't think they can win the Test series. I think they might still do well in the one days because they have, the hard. They usually have a really solid one day side. They do have really good cricketers. So let's see how that goes. Now let's go back to the last point in discussion for today's show, the return of Zimbabwe. I mean, how would you people look at this? I know that Zimbabwe have had issues with cricket, with administration, with all sorts of malfunctioning, and they returned back to cricket, and then you had Tatendra Taibu, mentioning things, saying that they were not getting money on time and things were not as well as it was meant to be. There were reports from Zimbabwe saying that Alistair Campbell and Tatendra Taibu were seen having an animated conversation in the middle of the ground or some such thing. There's been a lot said about they've written back to they've written back to test cricket. But in all seriousness, how would you look at it, Chandra? If I can start with you, I mean, would the romantic in you say that it's good for the game that there's hardly 9 days playing nations now, we have a 10th member back and it's good for the game of cricket? Or would you say that, hey, look, I don't think you guys are good enough to be playing test cricket again? How do you see it?
Well, I'm really glad to see them back in the test setup, to be honest, because as a foreigner, it's really hard to understand the intractability of the conflicts in Zimbabwe at the minute. I mean, look at it. I mean, here's a nation that ranks 7th in global diamond production, and you pick up a newspaper, you read about, say, Mugabe's relative of some sort getting caught in some smuggling scam, the news of hackers start getting the Zimbabwean stock exchange website, and reports of Zimbabwe being a center of human trafficking. So all that a citizen of Zimbabwe hears or reads about all day long is this. And cricket comes as a very, very positive change here. And amidst all this, Zimbabwe cricket's back on its heels, and I'm really, happy to see them back where they really belong. And they prepared by playing games against the South African and the Australian A teams. And this is something that I've written about in the past. That the teams in the lower rungs of the ICC rankings, those who are really struggling at the international level, can benefit from playing against the A teams of top nations so that they're more prepared for what would be in store for them at the international level. I think this could be a debate for another play, but nevertheless, I've always been a fan of the idea of a tiered test competition. But after nearly 6 years of absence, I think this is something a common Zimbabwean fan to fall apart from the political debacles that exist in this nation. And as you rightly said, controversy erupted before the start of the series, with Tiger voicing his opinions over the way Zimbabwean cricket was run. All this talk of the cricket union having painted a house that was about to fall. But what was good to see is the return of guys like Grant Flower in heatstreak and coaching positions to really turn this situation around. But what isn't are the issues that are of bigger concern, because no cricketer has been given a contract, they've not been paid their match fees in almost a year. And when you look at the way they've played, you wouldn't doubt all these, would you? I thought the players have been quite brilliant in putting all this behind them. And remember, these are not your millionaire superstars for whom the players' fame wouldn't account too much. So they've done really well. I think Brendan Taylor, the captain, has really stepped up and scored a century in the second innings to give the Bangladeshis a target of 375. So definitely pleasing news, and good for Zimbabwe cricket. And I really, really hope that their road to recovery is very smooth.
I mean, I agree to a certain extent that, I mean, for those of us who saw the glory heights of 1999, when they had a really serious outfit on both one day and test match, there was a really seriously good side. And then to have seen the lows of the 2003 World Cup in Zimbabwe and South Africa, wherein Andy Flower and Henry Olanga chose to wear black armbands as if to say that the death of democracy in Zimbabwe kind of thing. And it's been in shambles since then. Rajat, from your standpoint, how do you see that? Are you thrilled that you're seeing that you're seeing a Zimbabwean team back on Test cricket, or do you think it's still slightly premature that they're back?
No, I totally agree with Chandra here, and for various reasons. The definite one, he pointed out as to it'll be good for the general public, and the tennis fan in me just brings out Novak Djokovic's example. I mean, his ascent to the top has just given a huge morale boost to Serbia, and probably something similar could happen for Zimbabwe, who knows. But the other thing that I'm happy about is that the lower level teams can participate against each other and improve. I mean, you look at a Bangladesh, or you look at the Zimbabwe in 90s, they'll go to Australia or South Africa, get mauled and come back depressed. But now I'm looking at the scoreboard of Zimbabwe versus Bangladesh, and it actually looks to me a very exciting test match. Bangladesh requires 263 runs on the final day, and anybody can win. So it'll actually be good for test cricket if that happens, that Bangladesh, Zimbabwe, and maybe in future, say, Scotland can join in the test squad, and all these three play test against themselves, they'll improve, and then once they feel confident, they can again compete with the tier one teams. So it's good in every way.
No, it's wonderful. I think right with that, I think we've come to the end of today's discussion. Before we sign off, we would quickly take an opinion from the both of you on your prediction for the third test at Birmingham. Chandra, would you like to go first?
I think it's gonna bounce back.
India gonna bounce back.
2-1
Rajat.
after Birmingham. 2-1 after Birmingham.
Rajat, what's your opinion?
Slow bounce back, third test a draw, fourth test India wins and retains the number one ranking.
That's wonderful. I would think actually England has the best chance of, bearing India here and going for the kill. I would be surprised if they're not 3-0 by the end of the third test. So on that note, I think we've come to the end of this episode of Silly Point. Thanks a lot for joining us. Please leave your response in the comment section, and those interested in joining us can visit the How to Become a Couch Expert page. Thanks a lot, Rajat. Thanks a lot, Chandra. We'll see you in the next show.
Yep.
Thanks.